Joel McLeod, and welcome to the 905er. One of our earliest episodes was with Flavio Volpe, president of the Auto Parts Manufacturers Association of Canada, to discuss their concept vehicle, Project Aero. This revolutionary vehicle was meant to showcase the talents and skills of Canada's automotive sector as the industry transitioned into electric vehicles. We promised then that we would follow up with him once the project was officially revealed to the world. Well, that time has come. Earlier this year, at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the APMA finally lifted the cover off of this project that was years in the making. Afterwards, at the Toronto Auto Show, Canada finally got to see the car. To date, the reception has been enormously positive in the media. We reached out to Flavio to see if he'd find time to come back to the podcast to talk about Project Aero, how the reception has been to this concept, name some of the companies that contributed to the project, and what's the technology that is actually inside of this car. More importantly, we talk about the future of the project and the future of the industry in Canada and how it might reshape the 905, Ontario, and Canada as a whole. Flavio Volpe joins us today. Have a listen. Before we begin our interview, we'd like to remind our listeners to please like, share, and subscribe to the 905er on whatever device you're listening to us on. As well, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok to stay up to date with the latest episodes. And if you like what we're doing, please consider sponsoring us and donating a little bit of money to help us keep going. Visit us at 905er.ca and sign up at the supporter tab on the website. Thanks very much, everyone. Well, thank you for coming back on the podcast, Flavio Volpe, president of the Auto Parts Manufacturers Association of Canada, and one of the spear leaders on Project Aero, which we're glad to come back and talk about this now we finally know what it looks like. Yeah. I should say. But thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Well, I'm glad to be back on. You know, you sent your goons over to make the kind of request that I couldn't say no to. So here you have me.
The next step was going to be a horse head in the. So you know what? I'm hoping everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say Project Aero. You guys made a big splash at the Consumer Entertainment Show down in Las Vegas, and then you brought it up north here to the International Auto Show in Toronto. Yeah. What's the reception been like? What's the experience been like for you guys at the APMA for the last few months?
It's been crazy, and I don't want to take that for granted. You know, I had a conversation right before we pulled the sheet at the CES in Las Vegas with someone. I said, I'm actually not sure how this is going to go. I mean, we have everybody's attention. You know, people are going to write about it, and hopefully they write about the right thing. The fact that this really is us demonstrating what everything you can do in Canada rather than, hey, by the way, this is us launching a car company. But I'm not sure if it's going to be an aberration. You know, Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas is the place for auto reveals, or whether it's going to catch a little bit of fire. Well, I mean, it caught fire. I think I did 126 interviews maybe 4 or 5 weeks. And two big notes. Once we did the CES, you know, a lot of international press, like, hey, what is it? Who are you? What are the implications? And then we did the CIAS, the Toronto Auto Show, because, you know, this is a Team Canada play. It belonged on a stage in Toronto. And we wanted to, you know, that show, 350,000 people come to that show. We thought this is really the second half of this supposed to be the inspiring Canadians. Then let's put it in front of Canadians and let's see what they think. And, you know, there was an explosion then, you know, that it's really nice, you know, in this business is about selling parts and systems that don't have a name to them to car companies who put their names on them. Mm-hmm. And for those car companies, those parts companies and systems companies around this car to be able to show their friends and family at the Toronto Auto Show what they do, that was a real special moment.
Let's talk about some of the companies that were involved in this project, because I think I don't want to overshadow your leadership on getting this project together, but you know, they're kind of the Cinderella story of this, because they're the ones who had to do the assembly. They had to come up with how are they going to contribute to this? And you know, the auto industry is just a huge backbone of the economy here in Ontario and Canada. What does this project mean to a smaller auto parts manufacturing company to say, okay, we can showcase we're not just about putting a bolt in a door. We're about the next generation of cars that is coming. The market is hungry for these cars. What does it say to a smaller auto parts manufacturer that they're part of this project?
Well, let me use a GTA example. There's a company called Myint, run by a really dynamic guy named Tony Shaheen. They're out by the airport, Toronto Airport. They do intelligent textiles, textile computing. And they contributed a steering wheel that the materials on the wheel monitored vitals. And any way you want to orient what it would monitor, it was really kind of the human machine interface touch point. And we said this car's the design spec was, okay, we're going to build a level 3 autonomous vehicle connected, advanced applications of technology and software inside the vehicle. So we're going to orient it as vehicle as a caregiver. You know, if you have a chronic conditions, you can drive a vehicle where in a sense, when you otherwise would not be able to, or if you had a critical condition, this vehicle could take you to critical care at the point where the driver or the passenger connected with the vehicle is through Myint technology. To be able to demonstrate that at a show in front of thousands of people at CES who would buy that technology, who would consider it in its future design, and in front of 350,000 people who may buy a car that would have a feature like that, to be able to demonstrate it where you can see it, you can touch it, where when we did the reveal at the Toronto show on the stage, the minister responsible for federal development in Ontario said, hey, by the way, talk to Tony. If you have a heart attack while you're driving, this car could take you to critical care, and it goes through his technology. I mean, that's next level business development. That's next level storytelling. Wouldn't have been able to do that. Sure, you can put a steering wheel in people's hands. You can PowerPoint. You can show them in the textiles. But to be able to expand in a real way to people what the application is and where your imagination should start, the Aero did that. And there's 58 stories like that. I really like Tony's because it's where you touch the vehicle.
Well, it's one of those things. It's almost like, you know, really thinking outside of the box or outside the car, because I think when a lot of us are thinking of our interaction with a car, it's, you know, you get in, turn on the ignition and step in the gas, and you're going down the 401 or the 403. Yeah. And we have that kind of human machine interaction for the most part. But I mean, we are getting into the 21st century, and I think our relationship with these machines has to change a bit. And I thought that intrigues me, because I mean, even if you don't say, let's take it to the nearest hospital or whatnot, at the very least, if you are having a heart attack, like, in today's world, you could tie that into GPS and then your phone, and you could send it immediately a notification to 911 to say, hey, the car is located on the road here. Have an ambulance come by to assist the driver. And then, you know, casually just pull over to the side, so you're not impeding traffic, or you're not causing any greater accident. Like, that's the kind of safety features that, aside from just airbags, we need to start thinking of in our vehicles.
Yeah, and even comfort in your drive, right? Like, what makes the ride experience better? So Myint worked with a company called Woodbridge, is ironically headquartered here in Ontario and Mississauga, with one of their main plants in Woodbridge. Made some seats for us that kind of interacted with that same intelligent material. That you know, we go to one extreme of it, acute care, critical situation. The other thing is, instead of just tracking vitals, it's what's your body temperature? What's your heart rate like? And connect that to the AI platform that this vehicle is running on to change the ambient temperature or the music or the volume of it or whatever other features that are in the chair, the heating, cooling, massaging. These vehicles for a long haul, especially if you're not on an autonomous drive, you're driving it yourself. It will be, look, we've calculated the conditions. You are not aware at a level that you're not awake at a level that is safe for operation of the vehicle. Let's swap with one of the other passengers. Hey, by the way, the passenger in the back right has the right conditions. Here's a recommendation. And so, you know, Woodbridge makes really some of the really important materials that go inside seats in everything from, you know, Porsche to Nissan. And they'd be taking this vehicle and taking this car and going to their car maker customers and saying, look, there's another application of our technology. Try it. It's a unique way to do it and a way in which a company would never do. Like you would never build a prototype seat for that. First of all, when you're asking someone to just sit in a seat, then you got to do the one-off tooling and you got to do a whole bunch of other stuff on it. But because we aggregated all of these systems and the capital to do it in our working prototypes ourselves, you know, we invited these companies to bring us their innovation and their imagination. You're right. I mean, for us, we acted as GM, so to speak, a general manager of a team, not General Motors. And so, and then, you know, we put some coaches on the field and we assembled some talent and we said, okay, look, you write the lineup. You work through the game tactics. You know, we'll get an equipment supplier. Let's see how we play. And, you know, the role in GM is make sure they've got the resources, the vision and the objectives clearly. And, you know, hey, this is a championship team or this is a team going for a rebuild, you know, that it manifests itself on the field. This one here was, hey, you know what? We're going to the big leagues. And I think we're going to put enough talent together to go beat the Yankees a few times. And then let's see if they invite us into the American League East.
Hey, man, those damned Yankees. Yeah. So here's a bit of a fun question. What's your favorite feature on the car? What's the one thing you're just like, yeah, I want that in my next car.
I mean, I'm a car guy. I like to go fast. And so on this car here, we set up a dual motor setup, a TM4 motor from Quebec, and it's got 550 horsepower. And so we think that this car will do 0 to 100 kilometers per hour in 3.5 seconds, and we can reconfigure it to a three motor setup. So if we were to make a second one, I get that number under three. And I think never mind the smile it puts on my face. Let me show you how simple it is for electric vehicles. Design is electric vehicles. Can add that power number that would have eaten up the vast amount of the powertrain engineering spend that you would have in a normal car. Right. You want 1200 horsepower? We can do it. You want 300 horsepower? We can do it. It's, you know, in motors that fit in your gym bag, you know, and it takes that. The thing that was most important to me growing up as a car enthusiast, all of that, it's like, it's table stakes, man. And it's modular and you can do it. And I love that about electric vehicles.
Have you taken it on the road yet? You know, tell me you haven't like snuck in like late at night to say, you know what, I'm just taking this for a spinner in the parking lot. just between friends here.
I'll tell you. And the funny thing is that to an insurance company, that's not a car, that's a thing. And so without a VIN plate, I can't drive it on the road. Right? But you know, without telling on myself, let's say I've done more than just look at it.
I'm putting words in people's mouths here, but I think you should come out to the 905, take it down to Cayuga.
Yeah.
And show off what it can do on the strip there. You know, that's just saying.
Wouldn't that, like, First of all, that would be fun. And one of the things we talked about here is I remember being at a cruising in Etobicoke in 2017 or 18. And there's a cruising at a Canadian Tire on the Queensway on Friday nights and on Saturday nights. And Ford Canada brought the new Mustang in, just rolled it in. You know, a whole bunch of car enthusiasts in a parking lot, probably using the same parking lot for 20 years. And here's Ford rolling this car in there, and everybody stopped and walked over to where this car stops. Is that the Mustang? And I thought, you know what would be really cool is if we can figure out this insurance thing, grab this $20 million prototype and show up at some cruising one night and show it off to everybody.
We had we had Mark Cripps from the Insurance Bureau of Canada on the previous episode. You know what? We'll put you in touch and figure this out, because I'll be honest, I kind of want to see this thing go.
Yeah.
I want to see this thing, what it looks like cruising on the road, and what, you know, picture myself behind the wheel on the 401 or on the 403.
Well, we're working with Aviva Insurance. So
okay.
All right. I would normally say don't hold your breath, but you probably could start holding it. I think the good people at Aviva are
Aviva, if you're listening, make this happen.
Yeah, they've committed to helping out this program. Right. And one of them is getting this thing out there.
Well, I'll be honest, I'm being a bit selfish here, and I'll show my bias, because I'm hoping you do come down to KUG or bring it out to the 905 here, because I want to go and take a look at this, get a press pass and sit in the cockpit there and see what this puppy's like. But I want to kind of have you back to touch base on this, because there's something you brought up in the very first time we had you on that really tickle my mind. It goes to the economics of this thing, is that most of the times we think of this technology as sitting in the car industry silo. And there's something you said in the last episode, is that this technology isn't just car centric. It is applicable across various industries. And these companies that own the patents to this technology, you know, it opens the door to a broader economic purpose here. I'm wondering, you know, can you maybe just explain that a bit more for our listeners who are just tuning in now?
Sure. I think, look, so we built the car because we're in the car space. And so we said, we need to have really intelligent discussions about it. Like, if we're going to electrify, that means we're going to be connected, autonomous. We have intelligent infrastructure to be able to run these vehicles. Then that technology maybe changes the way the roads look like. I'm looking out at the 427 from my window here. How different does a 427 look like in a non-collision world, never mind a non-emissions world? And then what needs to happen in the ecosystem to make that happen? And then what are the applications for motorized power that is dependent on varying degrees of energy density in batteries? What could you use that for? And could you go right back to when you go back upstream to mining and extraction based on renewable energy, filling utility batteries that power the machines you use to pull this stuff out of the ground? So we need to buy a ticket to the dance. We did this, but we're really having a wider conversation with all three levels of government, and then with our counterpart industries, the ones that are complementary. And we're saying, okay, look, if the prime minister set a target of 100% zero emission vehicle sales of new cars by 2035, what has to happen in the energy distribution business, distribution, transmission, generation? What has to happen in the infrastructure build side of it? Like, how do you deliver that power? Do you deliver it at home? Is there a widespread induction charging? You know, one of the most suppliers on this car is eLeaf Power out of Stratford. It's induction charging. You know, right now, every single electric car that you buy has a kind of a standard plug-in, and you know, depending on the hardware in the car and that you have mounted, you know, you charge at different rates, but the coupling point is the same. Well, here we're talking about induction power. So is induction power at stoplights, in parking lots, down main roads, is that part of the future? This is a car that is an 800-watt platform, 800-volt platform. It could be 1200 volts, you know, depending on the size of the battery that we put in there. It's AI enabled cockpit and auto drive is, you know, we talk about, you know, Tony's steering wheel. The application of that technology is not just inside the car. Imagine if that car is now, isn't just bringing you to acute care, but it's signaling ahead to acute care that then gets its triage ready and then prioritizes who's incoming, how they come in, what's ready for them, early high-level diagnosis, that type of thing. It is, the cars will increasingly become part of the Internet of Things. They just happen to be that part that takes you somewhere. And then I think it causes ultimately for a redefinition of what a car is. General Motors tells all of us they're going to sell us zero emission vehicles, but their target's zero collisions. If you have a zero collision world, meaning these are all autonomous, connected, and using AI to predict the models of performance here, we could be in a scenario where we don't hit each other. If we don't hit each other, then we design them differently. All the regs on design are for safety, of pedestrian safety and for driver safety. That's how we define a low speed vehicle versus a light vehicle that gets licensed or heavy duty vehicles. Well, if they don't touch each other, what's the difference? And then they'll have different weights. And then we're really talking about your transportation device. And then you'll look at that full spectrum of everything from like a electric scooter all the way to a train that all pretty much operate on the same cloud in that same intelligent infrastructure, using the same powertrain and similar chemistry to power them, all of them really high voltage, all of them very intelligent. That's not 10 years out. It's maybe not even 20 years out, but it's certainly by the time my kids have a beard and gray hair, that's their reality.
It's funny you mention that, like the GM goal of zero collisions, because something that we've come up across on this podcast is the philosophy of Vision Zero, which is zero pedestrian fatalities, injuries. And a lot of that conversation, I guess rightfully so, centers around urban design, you know, one-way streets and all that stuff. And yet I was always been amazed. Like, nobody talks about going to the car companies and talking about how do we work to change that kind of that human car interface to bring that down. And it's you know, it's almost like that missing the missing variable of the equation that we're not talking to. I find that idea fascinating.
I mean, there's lots of car companies that are working. I'm going to give credit here to General Motors in Canada for a couple of things. A few years ago, they decided to hire 1,000 new engineers in Oshawa to work on connected autonomous drive. That's the stuff they're working on. And General Motors put it out there as part of their, you know, company objectives with the product and with the development of product. They go zero collision. For me, at least me personally, kind of reframed the sense of possibilities for the auto sector. Those two words put together. A zero collision world is a different type of subdivision approval as we're developing land across this province and this country. It is a algorithmic analysis of the current avenues that are available to vehicles. And if we're in a zero collision world, because they're all connected and maybe they're all autonomous, or maybe they're all autonomous in a downtown zone, then maybe you don't need all the lanes. You know, one of the things that drives me crazy, the city of Toronto, when the world shut down during a pandemic, went and put bike lanes in every single major street downtown. And then we all came back to work and go, oh my God, everything's cluttered. The fact of the matter is, people in the city of Toronto saying, maybe we need to do some bold things to rethink how we have an urban landscape. And if we push it a little bit, well, it's fine, because they pushed it in the other direction. And the fact is, I think we all benefit from the same things. And but for the first time in history, we're on the cusp of the enabling technology to allow us to do it without having to have a loser in the process. And if it's zero collisions, we have smaller cars. If it's zero collisions, we might not all be in cars. If it's zero, if it's all autonomous, modes of travel, I think that we're able to fit more vehicles, even if they're smaller, in the same space. We can plan our moves. They can be planned for us. Like, hey, by the way, I had a meeting downtown. I'm in, we're in Etobicoke here. I need to go downtown by 12. Well, the shuttle is going to appear downstairs at 11:37, and it's going to get you right there in time. It's going to do it in a zero emissions fashion. It's going to get you there right on time in a move that I would never be able to make personally. And if I tried to, I'd add that risk of collision. Now, imagine we were talking about insurance companies. Imagine being an insurance company in a autonomous zero collision world. How do you quantify risk? Where do you apply the cost of that risk? Who is liable for that risk? Is it that coder at Audi, or is it Joel who bought the Audi, or is it me? Who has written the code for the intelligent infrastructure that you connect to? Or is it the group that has come up with the software bill of materials that enables my vehicle to connect to the intelligent infrastructure? I don't know. But but what I do know is technology is putting us in a place where we all need to be part of the answer. We all need to rethink it. And usually that means no one's going to move. Why am I going to add cost and work? Well, I think we can all see the societal benefit if we get there. Now, I'm a driver, man. I love driving cars. I might be the last guy off the grid, but I know that I will be a risk to society, and it'll cost me money to do it. But for what's good, for all of us to have a better standard of living, it's possible, but we all need to be in the conversation. And so the Arrow is our ticket to that dance. And it's a demonstration that Canada has a bunch of the solutions and at the very least, a bunch of the other starting points.
I like the idea of technology being the solution to a lot of our problems, because, a lot of them are man-made. Like, our cities just didn't organically look the way they are because they just popped out of the ground that way. We built them like this. So the solution to making a safer future for pedestrians, car drivers, more environmentally friendly and safer for us all, it's got to be a man-made solution.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about, it's logically the next step, but I'm excited by the possibilities of it. On that note, I know this. I did want to bring this question up because I've seen you tweet about it a couple times, but. And it's not necessarily 905 centric, but I think it's important in terms of the overall landscape. And that's in St. Thomas, Volkswagen Canada announced that they're going to be dropping in a battery research facility and manufacturing plant in St. Thomas. And maybe it's not directly because of Project Arrow, but, maybe tell us, what is it about Ontario that makes it attractive to a company like Volkswagen to not set up their factory in Tennessee, where their North American manufacturing plant is, but in St. Thomas, Ontario, a short drive away from the 905?
Well, you're right. So Volkswagen made that decision not because of us, but because of the joint pitch by everybody here, including the people of Volkswagen Canada, who are best positioned to convince the people in Volkswagen and Wolfsburg. It's a few different factors. One is, if we're going to electrify, we're going to make batteries. We're going to make batteries. For each battery, we need thousands of pounds of rocks that then get processed and turned into usable chemistry that goes into cells, that goes into batteries. Those rocks, the ones that we need, lithium, graphite, cobalt, nickel are in the ground in the highest abundance in Northern Ontario and Quebec. And so from a logistical point of view, this is a very advantageous place, but also a place like St. Thomas that used to be the home of Ford, Crown Vic, Grand Marquis Manufacturing, or Sterling Truck Manufacturing. Those shut down in 2010, but that town didn't move. It's in the middle of the automotive corridor. And, you know, these things get staler as time goes by, but it's only been half of a generation. And there is a workforce there that understands advanced manufacturing that dispersed into the general area that now can go back to working at home. We've got great multimodal transport. We can get these batteries on trucks, on trains, and into the cars that they're going to be manufactured into. And then we have this great manufacturing culture in Canada where people pursue manufacturing jobs. They pay well. A lot of families have multiple employees, multiple family members as employees of manufacturing ventures. They stay with their companies longer. They get trained in manufacturing through high school and college, and in some cases, university. And they're the types of jobs that make living in St. Thomas a great place. So, you know, governments compete for this by cutting checks or tax credits or whatever. So those are available to all the U.S. states and all the Canadian provinces. You know, they make cars in a lot of different places in North America. There's a the biggest cluster is still here in Ontario, Michigan, and those Midwest states, but also U.S. Southeast is very important and Mexico is very important. But what's different here is the people, how long they'll stay with you, how they'll commit to you, the excellence at which they manufacture. All of the five automakers present in Ontario have won, and every plant has won JD Power Initial Quality Awards, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum for the Toyota Lexus plants here. So the whole area is probably the best place to run a 20-year manufacturing enterprise. And St. Thomas, that site in St. Thomas, that town and its history ended up being the best place in Ontario for Volkswagen.
Well, when I heard that Volkswagen was doing that, I thought it was good news for the 905, because I can imagine all the smaller companies that will be able to spin off from Volkswagen's investment into Ontario and whatnot. You know, because I don't think Volkswagen's going to be the only company to do this.
No,
over time.
No. And I think the way that I've characterized this investment for a lot of other people is, General Motors is going to do batteries in Ingersoll. Stellantis is going to do batteries in Windsor. General Motors is going to make electric motors in St. Catharines. Ford is going to make batteries in Oakville, where they're making the battery electric vehicles. Toyota is going to do that in Woodstock. Honda's going to do that in Alliston. Volkswagen investing in a gigafactory, kind of in the middle of that geography, further cements that foundation. And then allows for all of those subcomponent manufacturers, the battery trays, cathodes, anodes, thermal management systems, the power electronics, another customer here. So they further diversify their own businesses, further secure their own balance sheets. With, you know, what is the world's number two automaker, the biggest European one, and, you know, Toyota, Hyundai, Kia, General Motors have been battling out for number one in terms of size and timing and this, that, and the other. It really is another great opportunity for that supply sector that we think there's probably going to be 2,500 jobs in St. Thomas for Volkswagen. There's probably going to be another 5,000 jobs in and around 1, 2, 3, 4 hours from the plant. And all this stuff works in just-in-time manufacturing. That's just the standard in the industry. And so there'll be a whole bunch of it right in St. Thomas. But, you know, some of the companies that are in St. Thomas, London, are going to supply Windsor. Some of the companies in Windsor are going to supply there. We think there's 7,500 net new jobs here. And it's down the street. Yeah, it's down the street here. You know, I could, depending on who's driving, I can get to St. Thomas in an hour and a half from there, right? So,
I'm getting from your vibe that you think the future is bright for the auto sector here in Canada. I'm with bringing back to Project Arrow though. What's next? What's the what do you hope to see? What's the next thing that you're working on now? Now that Project Arrow is open, what's the next thing that you're going
to
do with it?
Well, we got the Project Arrow World Tour here. So what we're doing is we're taking it to car makers and to tier one suppliers and other interested companies and jurisdictions around North America. And then we'll be popping across the Atlantic and the Pacific. We're going to Atlanta, for example, to a suburb called Peachtree Corners that has dedicated itself and a series of its central city blocks to being the testing place for autonomous connected mobility technology. They've invested in the intelligent technology. We're going to do a demo of the Arrow there. We figured out the insurance for a Georgian demo. And we're going to, we think two dozen of the companies on the car are going to join us for meetings with BMW, UPS, Cisco, Bosch, Microsoft, Siemens, and VW to show off the wares. Then it's going to go to Detroit and do the same thing. It's going to go down to Palo Alto. It's going to go down to Texas. It's going to go to Ohio for one of the other manufacturers. So I almost said who it was. One of the other manufacturers in Kentucky. And so it will. The legacy of the Arrow is that it is going to create a book of business, you know, $500 million in new sales for the companies who were on it because they were on it. And they demonstrated it and they got those contracts. Those contracts are, you know, typically 5 to 7 years, you know.
Yeah, that's like, at any point, are you hoping maybe you see like the actual Arrow in commercial production on Canadian highways at some point? Is there any party that kind of hopes to see that happen at some point, perhaps?
You know, it's funny because, you know, anybody who listens to the 905 will say, well, it's a big production company. There must be 1,000 people there. And you know, when you sit back there and you go, well, it's me and a couple other people. It's like the APMA. It's me and 13 other people. We're a trade association. We're not going to make cars at volume. I mean, unless you've got $1 billion, you want to sponsor us from the podcast.
If I had $1 billion, I wouldn't be doing this, but I'm wondering if there's, you know, somebody out there might be saying, I could find $1 billion and I could, you know.
I had somebody in here this morning who said that. And what we said to everybody is, this isn't our car. I don't hold the patent on the technology. And this car was designed for you to get attracted to the technology that's on it and buy it. Now, if you want to buy it as a kind of a subsection of all the powertrain, the platform, the brains, and the substructures, and build your own vehicle out of it, I'm going to introduce you directly to all the suppliers who did that. If you want to use it as a kit to make your own car, I'm going to introduce you to all the suppliers who did it. If you want to make a Canadian car company, but you don't know where to get the talent, the suppliers, the design, the proof of concept, I have it. You've got to bring mobile equity. You've got to be prepared to talk to suppliers about volume and timing. But I made a prediction at the auto show, the Toronto Auto Show. I said within 10 years, people are going to come to this show and look on the floor and see Canadian cars for sale. I think the business models, they're shifting. They're not changing. Everything's all disruptive. No, but there's enough of an opening. 1 or 2 or 3 or 5% of the market, which is 100 million cars a year, will open up to different business models, and we're going to see Canadian cars there. I took this job because I'm a car guy, not because I'm an auto guy. The distinction being made for me by the hiring committee, who said, "Well, you're an enthusiast. We need someone who understands the business." I said, "Well, don't hire me then, or teach me the business." You can't teach me to love cars. I love cars. I would love to see the Arrow in production. I'd love to drive an Arrow and not this $20 million one that I can't insure. And I'd love to do that because I don't think that we did anything groundbreaking here except contextually. But I think that what we've done for the next generation of car guys and car girls is say, well, you can make a Canadian car company. Now do something special, make a compelling proposition. Maybe these are the no collision e-mobility vehicles of the future, but we're here to help you. Number one, to confirm that you can do it, to help you get there and to challenge you to do it, you know, to go out to be the lion and get it done. I think if we talked 4 years ago and I said to you, we're going to make a working prototype today, you'd say, well, are you crazy? You're a trade association. And how is that core business? And what would be the point of that? And now as we do interview number 126 and people are talking about Canada as an EV technology superpower, the Arrow's done a bit of that.
Well, I want to see more. I want to see that happen someday. So I'm hoping that somebody's listening who's got the deep pockets and has that little bit of gumption to say, I want to make that happen. So, but I do see we're coming up on our time, and I don't want to keep you any longer. But thanks very much, Flavio, for coming on and just giving us an update on how this project has turned out. And if you do get the insurance sorted out, come by my house. We'll go over to Timmy's, get a couple of double doubles, and we'll do donuts in the parking lot and go home.
I would love to. And I think we're going to do our next interview from inside the Arrow. And whether that's rolling or not, I'm going to have you in it and let's talk about it.
Done. Deal. All right.
Good. Okay.
Right. Thanks very much. Have a great one.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
Hey listeners, I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa, and this is Buried Motives, where we dig deep into the details of some of the most gruesome
dirtbag murderers. She said she enjoyed hurting things that can't fight back.
And that is a disturbing view into the mind of a murderer. And such a dirtbag.
Yeah, that's not even strong enough words. This is totally a recipe for disaster. And not to justify whatever is going to happen, but you can totally understand and see how this would be in the works.
If you were only to look at what she did later on and not know any of that history, she would appear like off the wall crazy.
Oh, 100%. Because we're not even close to getting to the end yet. But you can just see this pattern and all this kind of stuff developing in her, which is what we're here for. We're digging deep.
Join us each Thursday as we unearth the dirtbags that live among us
and the motives buried there. Hope you join us as we exhume the truth.